Zach, you remember when we had that spinoff show called Radio Vision?
I seem to recall, but it's been such a long time. I don't know why I said that.
I don't know. I thought you were going for the
just an old man waiting to die alone.
I think that's what I was thinking. I think I was doing Ken Sato. Ken Watanabe. Yeah.
Perfect. Hey guys, welcome back to Radio Vision. It's been a little bit of hiatus, but it's your boys. It's the two, the dynamic duo of Radiovania. It's me, John Swangathan, Swangathan Parker, and Zach Rotello. Hey, what's up, Zach?
Hey, buddy. How you doing today?
Good. You ready to talk some Batman?
I'm fucking ready, dude. Wrapped up my homework not 30 minutes ago, so I'm ready to rock and roll.
Got that one under the wire.
yeah, it's like back in the day. It brought me back to college. You know, it was submitting an assignment like right before the bell rings. I was like,
yeah.
Got 30 minutes.
There's not Spark Notes for Batman the Animated Series. Otherwise,
I think
it's
called
copy
Wikipedia. I think it might be just called Wikipedia.
I know, but their plot synopses are not as funny as mine, you know, so I have to like write them myself, which takes time.
We should pat each other on the back because between my terrible Fast and Furious plots and your Batman plots, I think we have some pretty entertaining content. Why our listenership is so low, I have no idea.
It's climbing. It's climbing every day, baby.
Climbing up. Yep, that's true. I look at the analytics every day. We're about to cross 2,000 plays. I think we actually, depending on the content, this is just a side note because I know we're about to talk Batman and no one really cares on this pod, but we might cross 2,000 lifetime plays of the podcast by the end of next month, maybe. It depends on the content. We got a lot of big hitters coming up, but we'll talk about that when we get to the real show.
So we should do a 2000s party. Is that what you're saying? Like where we just talk about the year 2000,
the best 2000s films draft or whatever.
Oh, that'd be fun. Yeah,
that actually could be really fun.
Yeah, everything post 99 until 2010. Dibs on training day. Yeah, that's a good one too. That would actually be really fun. There's a lot of good stuff from the beginning of the decade, for sure.
We're talking about the old Cape Crusader, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Yeah. So we're back to Radio Vision. This is our 11th installment of Radio Vision. We're currently watching all of Batman the Animated Series and talking about each episode. If you guys like the show, check it out at radiovania.com or search for Radiovania on YouTube to get links to some of the videos that we've created. If you have any questions about this show specifically, you can hit up radiovisionshow@gmail.com and then follow us on the socials, Radiovania Show on Instagram and Radiovania on Twitter. We are talking about three episodes for Batman the Animated Series this week that are as follows: Appointment in Crime Alley, Mad as a Hatter, and Dreams in Darkness. And Zach, this actually rounds out season one for us. So by our watch along.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Got it.
By our voodoo based watch along / season one ish time frame. Technically season one continues on the Wikipedia list, which we're following. Because the first order of the show is like 60 episodes or something like that. But if you're just doing this based off of the DVD box set, this is the end of volume one, which is pretty exciting.
The end of volume one. Okay, cool.
Yep. So we'll have volume two next, which will round out the end of the actual first season that aired on television. And then we get to talk about Mask of the Phantasm, which is going to be a delight. Mm-hmm. So without further ado, you want to dive in?
I would love to, my friend.
All right. So let's talk about our first episode, Appointment in Crime Alley. This is written by Jerry Conway, who is a pretty well-renowned comic book writer, actually. And directed by Boyd Kirkland. I've actually read some Conway stuff recently. He did something for DC lately. I can't remember. It was kind of dog shit. No offense, Jerry.
But, no, I was expecting.
Yeah.
get this shit together, Jerry. John's not happy with your work.
Some of his older stuff is really good. I think he did some stuff with The Question way back in the day, which was pretty cool. But directed by Boyd Kirkland, like I said. Our title card here is kind of like The Sopranos. It's just like a creepy alley with like red and black.
I'm into it.
Yeah. Like red and black color scheme with just very basically written out Appointment in Crime Alley. Pretty cool stuff. I was a big fan of this one. I'm actually a fan of all three of the title cards, so I'm excited to talk to you about those this week. But
For sure.
Quick little 2-minute synopsis about this episode. At 9 p.m., Roland Daggett and an associate named Nitro discusses blowing up a city street and making it look like an accident. According to the news, Daggett's company has tried to acquire the land that is Park Row, also known as Crime Alley, which is where the Waynes were murdered. And for the people that live there, they don't want to lose their homes, even though it's a rough neighborhood. So we got a little bit of gentrification themes going on here. You know, this is like the Phantom Menace. This is what kids like. You know, they love talking about gerrymandering. Yeah. On his way to a unspecified appointment, Batman discovers that some goons are trashing a lady's apartment because she didn't clear out like she was told from Park Row. Batman dispatches the goons, and the woman tells him that these goons have been muscling people out all week. Dr. Leslie Tompkins, a local psychiatrist, I believe is what her technical profession is, but she's also a nurse, is walking home when she happens upon Nitro and Daggett's associate rigging explosives in a condemned building on Park Row. She's taken hostage by them and tied up near the bomb. Batman goes to Leslie's office, which is where he was heading to the appointment all along, but she isn't there. He begins searching Park Row, and a local man holds Daggett's clerk hostage at the top of a billboard, claiming that all the eviction notices that he got, someone would need to pay for some of his, you know, lost, what am I trying to say here?
Merchandise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This guy's essentially getting kicked out of his home, and he's got nothing left. And so he's taking it out on one of Daggett's employees. Batman seduces both of them and moves on to Leslie's house, where he finds a photo book, and we get to kind of see through visual medium that she's known Bruce Wayne for his entire childhood. And there's a newspaper clipping within that photo book that shows her comforting Bruce the night that his parents died. Before I continue, do you know anything about Dr. Tompkins before this episode?
Doesn't ring a bell to me. No,
perfect.
I don't think so.
We'll talk about that when we finish the synopsis then. A local bum looks in through – sorry. A local – I can, sometimes I crack myself up. A local bum looks in through the windows that Batman is currently at Tompkins' house, and he's the same one who saw Tompkins get abducted earlier on in the episode. On his way – or on – damn. On his way – I must have been drunk when I wrote this. On his way to Leslie's location that he found out from the bum, Batman has to stop a runaway trolley using the Bat Spider-Man 2 hack on the Batmobile.
Mm.
Batman finds the arsonists and locks them up in their own truck and then goes into the building and saves Leslie and defuses the bomb. She warns him that the bomb at the hotel down the street will actually destroy hundreds because they have not been evicted, and Daggett doesn't seem to care. Park Row does blow up around 9 o'clock, exactly when Daggett tells the press at a local gala that he's at, that this would lead to progress, and Batman confronts him publicly with all the hotel survivors that we don't see him save on screen, but apparently he got there in time. So he publicly castrates Daggett pretty much, and then Daggett's like, oh no, it doesn't matter, and then leaves. And the episode ends with Batman and Leslie laying two roses at the site of the Wayne's murders together. So that's Appointment in Crime Alley. Dr. Leslie Tompkins is actually a pretty notable character in the Batman lore, but I'm not entirely sure if she was created for this show. I think she might have been in the comics first. Let me look that up. But Zach, while I'm looking that up, what did you think of the episode?
I really thought that's how you spell arsonists.
Arsonists.
I really thought that was how you spelled arsonists, but I was wrong. I mean, I'm looking at this now and it's like, yeah, there's an O in there. I guess arson, A-R-S-O-N, arsonists.
Arsonists, yeah. Okay, Leslie Tompkins made her debut in Detective Comics in 1976. So not created for the show, but featured prominently in episodes to come. So,
okay, so this may – this in a show – so we've been doing this pod for a while now, right?
A year, almost
a year, almost a full year, right? And we almost made it. We're almost here. Another year to go. But it's a kids show, right? Like it's a Batman is ultimately like an animated show for kids. I think that we've determined scientifically that there are quite a few, and we'll talk about one of them in here coming up, episodes that are very clearly made for a much older audience. And
yeah,
you know, it utilizes some really scary stuff. Like Batman the Animated Series is actually really, there's some profound moments. I mean, go back, fucking watch Heart of Ice, go back, watch all that shit. Like there's stuff in here that's like really, really well done. Yeah. I'm gonna call this episode the bottle episode of Batman the Animated Series. And I think recently, maybe not recently, but the term bottle episode, I think this is going to be a long walk for a short drink of water, so follow me on this one.
I got a whole box of wine, man. I'll go wherever you want.
Me too, buddy. Freshly bought today. You know what I mean?
Freaking out, bitch.
You, I got you for 3 minutes of playtime. Yeah. So the term bottle episode, I feel like resurfaced in what television show in the last few years?
Ooh, this is a great question. Is it one that I've seen?
Absolutely.
It's one that I've seen. Okay. Hold on.
It should be right on the tip of your tongue. With the term bottle episode, I think, resurfaced because of this specific show.
Oh, my God. Is it Lost?
No.
Last of Us?
No. What show has had bottle episodes that I've complained about?
The Mandalorian.
Exactly.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, gotcha.
That was the first season when they had that episode on the fucking planet with the woman and the children and the AT-ST, and everyone was like, oh, it's just a bottle episode. They use that term pejoratively, right? They were like
using it incorrectly, though, technically.
Well, isn't the term for a bottle episode like something that doesn't really connect to the larger story, but it's just something that's happening?
Narratively, yes. Technically, the bottle episode was referred to on television shows when they ran out of budget and they had to make an episode that exists in one room. So think of episodes like Charlie Work of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The bar the entire time.
Those are my favorite episodes of Always Sunny.
Exactly. The most recent one in the first season of The Bear, there's an entire episode that's a tracking shot in the kitchen. So it's things that you can save production budget by only having one set. So but it also typically sometimes doesn't matter to the plot of the show. And I think in this situation, that's what you're referring to.
Yeah. According to Merriam-Webster, it says noun, plural bottle episodes, an inexpensively produced episode of a television series that is typically confined to one setting. There we go. Yeah. So, okay. So in that respect then for the bottle episode, I mean, like thinking about Mandalorian, not expensive, but I complained about the fact that I was like, I don't like that this is just a confined story.
Yeah.
I like this episode a lot. I thought that Appointment in Crime Alley is really, really cool in terms of like, it's almost like POV. It reminded me a lot of POV.
Definitely.
In the sense where it's like, okay, we have a location, Crime Alley. We have scattered crimes. It's almost like this episode was directed by Ryan Johnson, where it's like,
yeah,
we just kind of want to subvert your expectations.
Die Hard 2 a lot.
Sure. Yeah. Trapped in an airport, right? Die Hard 2 is the airport.
No, I think that isn't Die Hard 2 the one that they got to go find the bombs all over the city?
That's three.
My bad. Okay. Die Hard 3 is what I was thinking of. Yeah.
But yeah, similar. Very good poll. Yeah. Where it's like, oh, it's Bruce Willis and Sam Jackson, and they got to go to this part of town and solve this thing. But then, oh, no, there's this thing on the other side of town.
Yeah. It's like Fetch Quests.
Fetch Quests, sure. So that being said, I think that there's episodes that do it wrong and episodes that do it right. And I thought that this was a really fun little romp. It's just cool to see, like, oh, it's a night in Batman's life. Like, you can see why this man goes through hell basically every day. And it's just kind of cool to follow him from step A to C and, like, you know, where he goes, what the crime is like, how he's hopping from place to place, how the crimes intermingle. Like, it's actually really geniusly made. It reminds me a lot of the opening of The Batman, right? Where it's like the rainy Halloween, it's Halloween night, the streets are crowded, or whatever. And I got
boom,
that vibe.
Boom, 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 boom,
boom,
boom.
Yeah.
Boom,
so,
boom.
I really like the episode. I think that, you know, ultimately it doesn't have, it's not very impactful in the grand scheme of things with this series, but I found it to be enjoyable. But you've seen this. Yeah. This is the first time I've seen all three of these episodes tonight. So this is mine and this one. So I don't know. Where do you come down on this guy?
I really like this episode. I actually... it's funny that you bring up the Batman, because couldn't you see this being like a subplot of like the Batman 2 or something like that, where like they try to incorporate Leslie and Batman's like recovery from his parents dying, and maybe because we know that he's super emo in the first Batman movie, that her therapy, if you want to call it even that, doesn't really work with him. So maybe they're at odds with each other, but.
Yeah,
I love the idea of anything that's set in Park Row. I think it's really good. There's actually some stuff later on in an episode that we'll talk about later. Whenever they get there, it's so thematic. It's so important because it's literally the birthplace of Batman that it seems to have like its own weight with the mythology, especially if you're super into this shit like we are. I like Leslie a lot. Different iterations of her. She's younger. She's more like Aunt May in this show, where she's like a little bit older. And by a little bit, I mean a lot. But... you know, there's that Gotham show that ran for a long time. I never saw it, but like she's played by Miranda Baccarin in that show.
Oh, really?
From, like, she's Deadpool, in the show. Who's like, you know, smoking hot.
So oh yeah, like, smoke show. Absolutely.
Yeah, they did the Marissa Tomei treatment on that show. But yeah, I really like this a lot. So Roland Daggett has obviously been a reoccurring like foil for Bruce Wayne. He's the businessman in this episode. He's been in a couple episodes, notably The Cat in the Claw, and others, and he's going to continue to resurface and the same way as like the crime lord Rupert Thorne in this show, because in Batman the Animated Series they didn't have Maroni and Falcone yet because Long Halloween hadn't come out yet, which is where those guys surface.
Holy,
which is really interesting.
Shit, Ben Mendelsohn. That's Daggett
in Dark Knight Rises.
No shit.
Do you feel in charge?
Oh my God. I had never put that together. I mean, I guess I really wasn't super familiar with Roland Daggett, but I had no idea that was fucking Ben Mendelsohn.
Yeah, man.
Holy shit.
Fucking Krennic himself.
I'm going to go watch Dark Knight Rises right now. I'm out.
I was wondering what would break first.
Ed Asner, dude, shout out to Ed Asner. He was the voice of the animated series. R.I.P.
Right? Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah. So that being said, I really enjoy when Daggett is he's kind of like Donald Trump, you know, to get political
a little bit.
He's like a public figure that is not able to be like indicted to go to prison, like ever. So it's like Rupert Thorne's the criminal side of things. Daggett's a little bit more public-private sector, like Lex Luthor almost, essentially. And I like all the fun, juicy stuff that leads to, especially in terms of, like, the mob development, where, like, he's hired this weird arsonist whose name is Nitro to, like, burn down this part of the city.
We have the best asylums. Our asylums are the best in this world, I promise you. They're the biggest. They have big towers, big lightning. It's all great. It's fantastic.
I'm working on it. It's getting better.
No, dude.
Now that he's out of office.
I don't even think you're working on it. I think you just got it straight
up.
Have
I got it?
Yeah. Beautiful. Thanks. Wonderful.
Appreciate it.
Anyway, strong transition from Donald Trump to talking about a cartoon. But yeah, we'll hold a pin in that, Donald.
Oh, yeah, right.
We got to finish up talking about this one. I really enjoy, in terms of like my favorite single moment of animation and stuff like that, I actually enjoy the billboard sequence. I think the billboard sequence shows a lot of like some of the themes that they touch on in the Batman, where with the renewal program and stuff like that.
Right.
Where it's like people that are down on their luck and the odds that are the ends that they'll go to be able to protect their families and stuff like that. It's the same thing that led to Joe Chill killing Bruce Wayne's parents and stuff like that. It's just a good reminder of how fucked up Gotham is. And I love the animation of that sequence, 'cause like all the spotlights are moving around, stuff like that up there. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh man. Favorite moment of animation. I mean, there's a, who's the woman, the older one? What's the older woman?
Dr. Tompkins.
Dr. Tompkins, right? The shot of like them like sitting next to each other, like with the street light or whatever. Just a cool little like quiet moment that you really don't see typically for Batman.
Yeah, they let the score speak for itself in that, which again, Shirley Walker, composer of this series, has such a good like eye and ear for that kind of stuff, which is awesome. So
I love the music in this, by the way. Like, we're going to talk about the one of the episodes coming up, but there's a music cue that I'm like, it's so good. It's such a good soundtrack. I would love to find, I don't know if they've ever pressed it, but like Batman the Animated Series, like vinyl record.
I'm sure they probably have one that at least includes a couple of like the major themes that they come up with, like for Bats and the Joker and stuff like that. You want to get nuts?
Come on, let's get nuts.
I mean, it's so funny though too that like we talked about this in our first episode of Radio Vision, that it's just an altered version of the Danny Elfman theme from 89, but it's distinct enough that it doesn't feel exactly the same.
It's like a cover. It's like, it's really, really cool. It's like
it has more piano in it, which is cool. Yeah.
Like, because Danny Elfman is right, isn't that Danny Elfman?
Yeah.
But this one's
yep.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Stuff. You know how they do like the live orchestras? Like you can go see Star Wars, but with a live orchestra. Wouldn't it be cool to go see an episode of the Batman the Animated Series? Like Mask of the Phantasm with a live orchestra? Holy shit, bro. Can you imagine?
Such a good movie. Best
I love
Batman
Mask
movie.
Of the Phantasm.
You saw that comic that I texted you guys?
Yes, I did.
I pulled that out of the bin and I was like, I need this. And the guy was like, that was in there? I was like, yeah, it's fine. He's like, okay.
That's happened multiple times at Carol and John's where I know. It happened with that number one whatever I bought. What was that number one issue that I bought?
Oh yeah.
I don't even fucking remember, but whatever it was like
no, it was recent. It was Rorschach, right?
Rorschach yeah. number one, yeah. And I sat it down on the thing, and the guy was like, "That was in there."
Yeah,
like, yeah. Just you like, bet your sweet ass it was.
Happenstance, finding cool shit. Yeah, it's good awesome. Stuff. But yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about our little ratings and rankings here, and kind of slot this in where it goes. Unless you have any more thoughts, but
no. I think
looking
I said
forward
my
to talking about the other ones. I think this is a good episode, so let's see where it falls on everything.
Yeah, we're getting to the point where it's starting to get unwieldy. But I can go ahead and read the whole. Should I read the whole list now? Since this will be the only time I read the whole list.
Correct.
Okay. So please. Batman the Animated Series ranked. We're up to 25 episodes here.
Yeah. So we might have to start.
We'll have to start breaking them up into tiers or something like that.
Yeah.
But I'll go ahead and read it. This will be the last time, and then y'all can just keep up at home if you're playing the game along with us. Coming in at number 25, we have The Underdwellers. Number 24, Prophecy of Doom. Number 23, The Forgotten. Number 22, I've Got Batman in My Basement. Number 21, Vendetta. Number 20, See No Evil. Number 19, It's Never Too Late. Number 18, Cat in the Claw Part 2. Number 17, Fear of Victory. Number 16, Be a Clown. Number 15, Feet of Clay Part 1. Number 14, On Leather Wings. Number 13, POV. Number 12, Feet of Clay Part 2. Number 11, The Cat in the Claw Part 1. Number 10, The Last Laugh. Number 9, Two-Face Part 2. Number 8, The Clock King. Number 7, Pretty Poison. Number 6, Beware the Grey Ghost. Number 5, Nothing to Fear. Number 4, Christmas with the Joker. Number 3, Joker's Favor. Number 2, Two-Face Part 1. And number 1, Heart of Ice. And let me just tell you, buddy.
Nice going, man.
Reading number 2, Two-Face Part 1 is...
It's a real brain messer.
It makes my brain just want to fall apart.
So what I think we should start doing now that we've wrapped up volume one after this episode is using our barometer that we've always used, which is this episode better than On Leather Wings? And then we go from there. You know what I mean?
Okay, so we break the list in half starting at On Leather Wings at number 14.
Because I think On Leather Wings is like a perfectly like medium great episode of Batman the Animated Series. And it's like... If it's better than that, then we can read the whole list above it. If it's worse than that, we read the bottom part of the list. So then we start creating tiers where it's like, you know, further down, it's like, well, is it better than I've Got Batman in My Basement or is it worse? You know what I mean? Okay. So like we can break it up that way, but you and I can dissect that later on. That being said, is this episode better than On Leather Wings?
I'm struggling, man, because I don't know if I want to put this above On Leather Wing. I think it's right around there.
Yeah.
I don't think On Leather Wings is just such a cool start. It has that really awesome scene with the blimp, the Zeppelin, like the whole fight scene, which I think is better than anything in this episode. But I think this episode is more consistently good the whole way through.
Yeah.
So I'm inclined to put this above On Leather Wings below POV.
Okay. I would actually probably agree with you there. I'm trying to like think back on if I really do enjoy the narrative structure of POV more versus like this episode almost feels like an anthology episode where it's like Batman's going from place to place, but we're checking in on this guy that got evicted, we're checking in on this bum, we're checking in on Dr. Tompkins, we're checking in on like all these other people that we don't normally see. You know what I mean?
This is like Pablo Lies. Remember that episode from Lost?
Oh, Paolo and Nikki?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When it's like they focus on the other characters for a little bit.
Sucks. That's like
that
episode actually.
That might be the worst episode of Lost, but
I think I think this would be a good number 14. I think I would agree with you.
So jumps above On Leather Wings. I think that it's consistently better than On Leather Wings, but I think that the mystery narrative of POV, and just having more involvement from Batman, I think makes that episode a little bit better.
Yeah, and POV is such a funnier episode too. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Okay. So then it is official. Appointment on Crime Alley slots in at the new number 14.
Perfect. Right on. All right. Well, let's talk about a very wild transition into the next episode. So the next episode is Mad as a Hatter, written by Paul Dini, who we really enjoy, and directed by Frank Power. Title card here is sick. It's literally just like a rendition of an illustration from the Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Before we dive into it, Zach, the Mad Hatter as a villain.
We're talking about it before the plot?
Yeah, unless you want me to read the plot first. I just want to know your history with the villain.
With the villain. Next to none. Was he in any of the Arkham games? No, right?
He is in Arkham City.
Okay.
For 10 minutes. And then he is in Arkham Knight as a DLC.
Oh, Lord.
Not a whole lot.
So then, no, my exposure to the character is this episode and whatever the deep recesses of my brain remembers from Arkham City, I guess.
Yeah. Now, the Mad Hatter as a character that's not a Batman character, Johnny Depp, right? That's your go-to guy?
Yep, old Johnny Depp. That's right. Have you seen those movies, the Alice in Wonderland?
No, dude.
I saw that first one in the theater.
Damn, I'm sorry.
It's atrocious. It is
so
bad. It is one of the ugliest movies I've ever seen. I like Tim Burton a lot, but
yeah, but this is like when Tim Burton got into CG after Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah.
Yes. Oh man, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and then that. Yeah, back to back. Just
tough L's to be taken for a guy, Timmy B.
Timmy B.
It's such a shame, man, because Tim Burton in the 80s and the 90s is like one of the coolest auteurs that ever existed. And then he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to stick with Johnny Depp for everything, and we're just going to figure it out.
I'm going to remake one of the most beloved movies of all time, and then I'm also going to remake one of the most beloved fairy tales of all time. And in both of them, I'm going to cast Johnny Depp. I'll be like, wait a second, Tim. I think we got to change the plan here a little bit.
Now, I should say, I am very excited for us to do our Wonka triple threat episode where we watch Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Willy Wonka, and the new Wonka movie with Timmy Chalamet. It's going to be so good.
Here's the thing. Side note. Here's the thing about that, because I'm totally in Wonka cast coming to you. The Great Glass Podcast.
That's gonna pass the Lost in terms of listens. It has to. It's gonna be so good. Yeah, we have to take acid. We should totally drop acid and then we do the
That being said, we'll talk about this because we actually have Wonka news in the main podcast for the first time.
Yeah, I'll table it for later.
But that pod, I'd be what a trip that's gonna be.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this episode specifically in our version of the Mad Hatter in the Batman world, which is Jervis Tetch. Bear with me because this plot is weird. It's a little creepy. So here we go.
This plot is 50 first dates meet Batman meet.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like Simple Jack trying to get a date out here. Oh, boy. All right. A man mind controls a bunch of rats in a lab into sitting around a tea party table. This man's name is Jervis Tetch.
And this fucking episode, man.
And he claims that no one believes in his microchips that enhance brain potential. So he's monologuing, folks. His secretary, Alice, which I remembered that her name was Alice as soon as he had it, and I literally did one of these. Just big ass eye roll. Secretary, Alice, warns him that their supervisor and Bruce Wayne are coming back in to check on his latest project. Tetch tells him that he's not ready to roll it out to R&D, and Bruce gives him one more chance, much to the displeasure of Tetch's supervisor. Jervis then awkwardly flirts with Alice and is jealous of her boyfriend, Billy. After monologuing about his creepy obsession with her back in his office, he hears her crying about her breakup with the boyfriend in the other room. Jervis swings by her apartment dressed up as the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland. And while they're on a stroll in the park, they get mugged. However, Jervis puts these circuit cards into the goons' conveniently placed headbands that they're both wearing and mind controls them into leaving.
All right, hold on a second. Time out. I got to stop you here.
Yeah.
He swings by her apartment dressed up as the Mad Hatter for Alice in Wonderland. Is that purposeful?
Yeah, because he likes Alice in Wonderland a lot.
He just likes Alice in Wonderland. Okay, so got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
At least that was my interpretation, unless he plans to dress like that all the time. But
is Alice in Wonderland referenced in the episode beyond the fact that it's like symbolic? He's like playing with the mouses, but is he reading Alice in Wonderland or something like that?
We'll get to that when they make the grand reference to it. But his obsession with Alice in Wonderland is like that's his favorite story. And he's a creepy mind control guy. And he just like it literally like he's not like the Mad Hatter, besides the fact that he's crazy and wears a hat. So yeah. Anywho. So he convinces them to jump in the river with mind control. Batman's driving around and picks up a police radio call that there's two potential suicide jumpers, which when I heard them say suicide on a kid's show, I was like,
this show was standards made in a different practices. Time.
Yeah.
It's made in a different time, but at the same time, it's like, you know, don't treat kids with kitty gloves, you know? Like, I mean,
yeah.
At least why, IMO. I mean, I don't think that that's like a horrifying thing to like drop like that. I mean, they're not like showing it or whatever, but like.
No, but they are showing two men climbing up a bridge to jump off, which is, you know.
Anywho. Yeah, but we don't see the aftermath, so.
Yeah, because Batman saves them. Batman goes to the bridge, and these two goons are the same as the ones from the park, and he saves them from jumping over the side. And then as they land from this massive jump that he saves them from, those tech cards become dislodged from their headbands, and they wake up not remembering anything. Jervis takes Alice to a nice dinner that evening where several mind-controlled servers, photographers, and musicians gawk over them and act like he's the godfather, essentially. Batman is analyzing the card that he found on one of the goons, and him and Alfred concur that the 10/6 image that's on one side of the card matches illustrations of the Mad Hatter from Alice's Adventures in Wonderland, which Alfred makes the grand breakthrough on that. And this image was also proudly displayed in Tetch's office that Bruce clocked earlier in the day. Alice gets dropped off by Tetch and then reunites with her boyfriend, who's conveniently waiting inside. They get back together. Jervis goes into work the next day, and he's pissed to see that Billy reunited with Alice and then proposed to her in the same evening and that she's off the market again. Bruce Wayne goes in and talks to Alice about where Tetch might be now that he knows that, you know, this guy might be up to something. And then a mind control Billy calls her and breaks off their engagement. She's just going on this emotional roller coaster that honestly I don't care about, but it's happening. She goes home and Jervis is waiting for her. And thankfully, Batman also followed her back too. He fights two henchmen that Jervis has dressed up in giant animal suits. And we're just like, I don't know where these are coming from. But once Batman dispatches the goons, he sees that there's a little card inside the costume that's his property of Gotham Storybook Land. So that's nice, convenient. Batman goes to the Storybook Land theme park, and we see that there is an entire Alice in Wonderland section of the amusement park where Jervis has several mind-controlled citizens like Billy and their boss, and they all have enhanced strength to stop Batman. Batman thankfully dispatches them and follows the Mad Hatter into a maze of playing cards. He tells them that the only love that he has with Alice in this state is like a mindless doll. Billy and Alice reunite after Batman stops the Mad Hatter, who is now crying at the sight of the two lovers.
Once again, Batman defeats the enemy using emotional battering. I was like, okay, how did you know that plan was going to work, Batman? How did you know that was going to work?
It's pretty wild. My guy knows when somebody's going through some shit, you know? He's like, hey, it's okay. It's okay. You're crazy.
Hey, it's just me. It's Batman.
It's me. I'm Mark Wahlberg. It's going to be good.
Yeah. I went into Mark Wahlberg there for a second.
By the way, side note, I have a really funny Mark Wahlberg related TikTok that I have to send to you when this is over. Julia shared it with me and it is hilarious. Because okay, perfect. I love Mark.
Oh, who doesn't love old Marky Mark?
I think I found a Transformer. Yeah, so Zach, what did you think about the episode here?
Okay, well, before I get into the episode and criticize it, I'm going to say shout out to Alice.
Yes.
Who's played by Kimmy Robertson.
Yep.
Who is Lucy in Twin Peaks and is one of my absolute favorite parts of that entire fucking show. Her performance is fucking brilliant. I can't wait for you to watch Twin Peaks. It's so good.
Yeah. Radio Vision in 2030.
Radio Vision, whenever we get to that show. Whenever we get to it, you're going to love it, I swear to God. But yeah, no, when I heard her voice, it's one of those voices where it's like instantaneous. I was like, that's fucking Kimmy Robertson. I know exactly who that was. She just has the most distinctive, unique voice. Like, it's her and Joey Lauren Adams. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
Holden. Yeah. I'm gay. That's who I am. It's what defines me. So
good.
Yeah. It's so good. Dude, Chasing Amy is so good. But yeah, so this episode, I did not really care for this episode. And I think we might differ on this maybe a little bit. I'm not sure, but I'm just going to say this. I expect to, when I sit down at this point, I've been conditioned after 26 episodes of this show. If I see the name Paul Dini, I'm expecting fucking masterpiece.
Yeah,
and right. By the time this episode ended, I was like, what in the flying fuck was that?
Yeah.
I thought this episode was weird and not like at all satisfying. I found it funny, so I guess maybe that gives it some points, is the fact that like I can kind of laugh at it a little bit, is like, yeah, oh, the Mad Hatter but stuff is not weird, like, but
it's not endearing funny like the Clock King, though. And I would agree with
No.
Paul Dini is a very talented writer and is many of the greatest episodes of Batman the Animated Series, but you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, and sometimes you just go up and you just fucking miss one, and it happens.
Hey, sometimes even MJ missed a free throw, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think, you know, when you take a look at the entire show as a whole, obviously he's going to have a couple that aren't perfect, and this is definitely one of them. What I found pretty interesting is that this has an 8.0 rating on IMDb, and I thought that was kind of high.
Woof.
But, you know, that's fine. Do you know who played the Mad Hatter?
No.
Roddy McDowell. You know who that is?
The name sounds familiar.
He's from he was the original Caesar in Planet of the Apes, like the 60s ones.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm gonna go ahead and tell you this, Zach. There is a Mad Hatter episode that we're getting close to that is one of my favorite episodes of the show, and this is not anywhere close to that. So I'm kinda in the same boat with you in terms of like it being just kind of weird. I'm also just like, feel like we should mention it, this like subtle rapey vibe that the Mad Hatter's like really not for me.
No, it's incredibly problematic. It's very what's your plan here, Mad Hatter? You're just gonna mind control this girl into getting into bed with you? Like, is that the plan?
What, you know, and that's the point essentially that Batman's making at the end. He's like, when she's like this, she's like a lifeless doll, you know, and he's essentially just being like congrats, like, buddy, so? You got a sex doll here. Yeah, and Mad Hatter's like, you know, he does eventually tap into Mad Hatter's empathy that he'd rather, you know, have her love him for real, but it's still just like, yeah, what was your end game there? Like, I'm not entirely sure. It's kind of a dicey.
And here's another problem I have with this, is that I think I would have liked this episode better, and I don't mean to be mean. I mean, these are fucking cartoon characters, so I guess I can be mean. I guess it doesn't matter, but if this guy didn't look like a fucking alien, maybe I would have a little bit more, like, you would be able to, not sympathize is the right word, but like, he just doesn't look, he looks like a fucking cartoon. Like, I feel like for the most part, these characters are like, what happened? Like, Batman's this like strong square physique. We've talked to this whole fucking series about the whole Art Deco retro inspired, you know, post that modernist, like that look of this show that looks so iconic for it. But it's like, then you got this fucking clown who doesn't look like anything. He looks like Elmer Fudd, and I'm like, it just doesn't look like, I don't know, like, I think it would have been more interesting if he had a more, had a physique and a design that was a little bit more intimidating, but they made him look like such a doofus that it's like, it just doesn't, I don't think it works. Like, and I'm curious to know, cause you said there's a Mad Hatter episode coming up that you really liked. I'm curious to know, like, future spoilers, maybe, do they change the way that the guy looks, or do they keep the same
character when they design? When they do the grand revamp for when they kick it over to the new Batman Adventures, when all the characters get a redesign, he does look cooler. But the episode that I'm talking about specifically, he's not in the bow tie and hat. So
cool.
But I'm not gonna tell you any more than that because I do really like it a lot.
Perfect.
But yeah, I would agree with you. This is definitely like the first version of the character that is noticeably like ridiculous looking, which, like, he's an ugly guy, you know. I have some great, you know, reference materials for what I like the Mad Hatter to look like, which is the Tim Sale version in Long Halloween,
yes,
and like the Haunted Night stuff, and that shit is like terrifying. And like, if he was a little scarier, that'd be kind of cooler, but they went for the more like goofy Looney Tune type look here.
Okay. Okay. So then I take it back, because you asked me what my opinions are of the character. I totally forgot about his appearance in Long Halloween.
So sick.
So awesome. And such a creepy ass fucking design.
Yeah. If they would have done this a little bit more, with the giant ass hat and the tailcoats and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. If they would have done this kind of design in the cartoon, I think it would have been a little bit more intimidating that he's like bending these people's minds to his will and kind of like doing this, like, almost, it's like, oh geez, like, he's got this like poor defenseless woman, like,
well, that he's... let me remind you of something. Do you ever watch Jessica Jones?
So I saw the first half. I think I fell off towards the end and finish it. But
if
they did a
Purple Man Kilgraves thing, like David Tennant as the Mad Hatter, like, that's creepy, and like, I can get behind that. This guy's just like, he's like,
I imagine him as come on screen and go, and like, oh, he is,
it's Wabbit season or whatever. And that's the thing is, like, when it comes down to it at the end, he is ultimately harmless. Like, if he had more of a sinister plot behind it, you know, which some of his other stuff he does, not in this episode specifically, but
I'm excited.
The forlorn, you know, spurred lover tactic just doesn't really work for me. For those obvious reasons that we mentioned.
I guess I'm just surprised that this is like a fan beloved episode then. Like, if it has such a high rating.
I don't think it's the best in terms of Mad Hatter episodes that fans really enjoy, at least not from other people that I've talked to, but I think it's just got that Paul Dini bump. You know what I mean? Like, it gets that extra point just because people are like, oh yeah, I like him.
It got the Dini double.
The Dini dosage.
A little dosage of Dini. Serving it up on a rye bread.
Now, that being said, in terms of animation moments that I really enjoy.
Oh, animation moments. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good. I kind of like when he's got Batman pinned in the playing cards. I think that's really cool. And then he's got the giant axe. He's about to chop his head off with it. That's pretty cool. But that's me grasping at straws there. So,
there's
a lot of running around. Maybe him dancing out on the street after he drops her off. That's pretty funny. I had a good chuckle about that. I was like, this guy's a loon.
The thing that made me laugh was, I'm gonna cheat here and say that my best animation cell is also just my favorite performance part of this episode. Can I cheat and do that?
Please.
Is that okay? Is that a part of the rules? Okay. Yeah. There are no rules. We make the rules. It's our show. The scene where Bruce Wayne is in there talking to Kimmy. What's her fucking name? Alice, right? Alice. Okay.
Yeah.
He's talking to Alice, who's played by Kimmy. And she's like, oh, this is for my fiance or whatever. And Bruce
is like, congratulations.
Yeah. And then he calls her on the phone. He calls her on the phone to break up with her because the Mad Hatter's got a spell on her. And she actually, I think, gives a pretty good performance.
I know.
She's like, what? What are you saying? Don't do this. And then it's like, I'm sorry, Mr. Wayne. I'm going to need a moment or whatever. And I was like, man, that fucking sucks. Can you imagine if you were engaged to the love of your life or whatever, and then they break it off with you over their phone call while you're at work?
Yeah, so let's unpack this. In 48 hours, she's gotten dumped by her boyfriend, went on a date with the Mad Hatter, got back together with her boyfriend that night. Next day, she's at work telling people about it, and then he calls her that day and calls off the engagement. Yikes.
She gonna need some therapy. She's definitely gonna need some therapy.
Oh, God. I really – shout out to Kevin Conroy, a legend, RIP. That moment that you're talking about, too, when she's like, it's my fiancé. He just goes like, congratulations. And like he's like whispering because she's on the phone. Hilarious.
Like, it's like, do you really mean that, Bruce? Are you trying to hit
he's
that?
He's just
are you
like, come on. He's like, where's Jervis Tetch? I'm trying to get this shit done.
Congratulations. He gets really close. He's like, congratulations. That's funny as hell, man. I didn't even put two and two together on that one. That's so really funny.
All right. Is this episode better than On Leather Wings?
I would say no. Way worse.
Okay.
Put it in the bottom.
Is this episode better than I've Got Batman in My Basement?
Oh,
which Lord. Is again the Penguin versus Children.
Well, when you put it like that, I think, remind me what happens in Vendetta. What's Vendetta?
So Vendetta
about?
Is the Killer Croc episode that we recently watched where it's like he's trying to frame Harvey Bullock. I don't think this is better than that, personally.
Yeah, I would probably say that this goes above. I think this is the new 23. I actually think that you're spot on there. Yep. I don't think that this is better than Vendetta or anything above it, but I definitely think it's better than it's better. The bottom four are like Garbo, man. Like,
yeah, dude. I've got Batman in my basement. Garbo. The Forgotten, Prophecy of Doom, and Underdwellers is tough.
It's a tough stretch.
It's a tough place to be.
It's a tough place. So yeah, I would say this slots in at the new number 23.
Perfect. I agree wholeheartedly.
Mad at the Hatter. Mad at the Hatter. All right. Mad as the Hatter slots in at the new number 23.
Perfect. All right. And then our last episode of the evening, one that I'm very excited to talk to you about.
Fucking yeah. Dude, holy yeah. shit. What a fucking episode, man.
I'm so glad this is what we get to end on. Yeah.
What an absolute EKG it was after the Mad Hatter or whatever. I was like, this episode fucking rules.
I know. Yeah. It's almost like it's like when you watch something so bad that the follow up, you're like, is this Citizen Kane? This is amazing.
It's like so going to see The Room and then going and watching Deepwater. Yeah, like, exactly. Oh, man, this is the best movie ever made.
So this is Dreams in Darkness, written by Judith and Garfield Reeves Stevens and directed by our homie Dick Sebast. Great title card, Dreams in Darkness.
Yeah, super cool.
This creepy font, and it's Batman in a asylum cell with the fucking straitjacket on. But it's like all shadows, like blue and black. I fucking loved it. I was like, yeah, this cool. would be – if you take out the Dreams in Darkness and just clip this as a T-shirt, you would have a happy Jonathan right there.
Maybe I should get real emo, get this as a tattoo.
Oh, dude, that would be sick.
Across my back.
Wait, is that how we end Radio Vision? Is we have to pick one title card to get a tattoo of? That's a great idea.
That's a great idea. Fuck.
Oh, that's good.
All right, okay, so then should we add a new? We'll add a new thing when we do title card watch. Is that
is it you tattoo get this, material?
Tattoo worthy? Is it tattoo worthy? Yeah.
This one is definitely tattoo worthy of all the I would three say, that there is tonight. I think.
Yeah, I would say absolutely. This is the most tattoo-ish of the three.
If you did Appointment in Crime Alley without the font and it's just the alley, and then people are like, "What's your tattoo?" You're like, "It's where the Waynes were murdered." People are gonna be like, "Yo, this guy's fucked."
Someone call the cops. this guy's not right.
This guy's crazy. Okay, Zach, here we go. Let me tell you a little story about the Scarecrow. Tell me if you've heard of this before.
I'm here to gather around the fire. I'm listening to old Uncle Jonathan tell me a story. Tell me a story.
This is the first time you've heard this Scarecrow-centered plot. God. In Arkham Asylum, Dr. Bartholomew checks in on the newest patient. Batman? Batman claims that there isn't any more time and that Gordon can clear his name from being in Arkham Asylum, but the doc says that he needs further treatment. Flashback to a detective narration where Batman is telling us that he was a couple days ago checking in on a robbery at a health spa. There's a thief there that's tampering with the drinking water supply at the spa, and this Bioshock-esque man with a drill on his hand misses striking Batman and electrocutes himself on a device attached to the water supply. This causes a little gas spillage that impacts both him, knocks him out, as well as Batman ingesting some of the gas. Batman takes the device and a video message that he clipped together to the goon back home because the goon is passed out in the hospital. There, he begins to hallucinate that he's seeing the Joker in his computer and other enemies in the Batcave. Batman tells Alfred that the device matches a water purifier system that was recently stolen. He deduces that the device was meant to tamper with the water and that gas would become oxidized from it, and that's why he hasn't been able to pinpoint what the gas is. At the hospital, Batman confirms that he has also been poisoned the same way as the goon, and a doctor tells him that it's something that affects the fear reactions in the brain. So you got to know who that's dealing with. The doctor then gives Batman sleeping pills that will not come out for 2 days, but he refuses to ingest them until the case is over. On his way to confront the primary suspect that he thinks, Batman crashes the Batmobile thinking that he's about to hit Robin on the side of the road. The fallout of this accident lands Batman in Arkham, where we pick up at the beginning of the episode. Bartholomew confronts Batman about his crazy claims that he's been having, and they debate over the ethics of the Arkham holding these psychos that Batman brings in, and the doc leaves Batman to think about whether he truly should be joining them or not. Scarecrow reveals to his gang that he set this elaborate trap to get Batman off the board and so that he can unveil his scheme and it will, you know, impact Gotham. Essentially, he's pumping his fear toxin into the water. Batman has a nightmare of his parents walking into Crime Alley, but is unable to save them in a very dramatic sequence. Then he wakes up and the doc comes in shortly after to tell him that Crane has indeed escaped from his room. Batman later escapes on his own to go and confront the Scarecrow. Quick pause. This moment right here where he's cutting the straitjacket off with an axe. I need looks a gif like of that twerking. Where he's doing the booty shake.
He's doing the bat twerk.
We need a gif out of that. It's so good. Down in the caverns underneath Arkham, Batman has the worst hallucination yet of the episode. All of his villains and cohorts are taunting him, and Batman recovers from this thankfully in order to battle with Scarecrow on the water filtration system. He's constantly being derailed by fear gas hallucinations. However, the device is eventually destroyed, and Scarecrow succumbs to his own gas explosion. Back at the Batcave, Alfred gives Bruce the sleeping medicine that he needs so he can finally kick the poison in his system, and Batman says he's glad that he feels safe here as a bat looks on, protecting him. Dreams in Darkness, also known as Batman Begins.
And we'll talk about this later
in
the actual podcast. I had a really fucking weird coincidence this week.
this is a coincidence for you?
Yeah, total coincidence.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Dude, this fucking episode fucking rules.
Yeah.
So much awesome animation in this episode. There's some wacky, weird stuff. You already brought up the bat torque. I wanna bring special attention to a moment that got a good laugh out loud from Zach was. And I was watching this with Emily just before we did the podcast. And there's a moment where he's like trying to figure out, he's like, these goons are coming at me. What do I do to stop them? And he whistles. And that's how he.
So good.
And I was like, what the fuck is that? Was that Batman?
That's like them tapping into the Adam West type like vibes.
Yeah, that was super Adam West. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But man, I'll just say it right off the bat, man. I think that this is. I think this might be one of my favorite episodes we've watched. I think that
I agree.
The animation style alone and the impressiveness of the visuals and the way that the episode starts. I thought that the episode starts in such a really, really cool way.
Immediately
you cut the audience off. You don't know what's going on. He's in Arkham Asylum. He's being treated. He's in the straitjacket. What is happening? And I think that it's just a cool setup, like the idea of like, you didn't see him getting like the fear toxin stuff or whatever, but it's like he's just becoming like loose and it's like they're fiddling around with his mask, they're throwing him in the cell, like it's just such a cool concept. I think that this is a really, really creative use of the Scarecrow, and it's obviously why Christopher Nolan took inspiration to make his movie because it's almost identical.
Loose term. Yeah.
Inspiration, yeah. So
yeah, obviously there's some major differences between this and Batman Begins, particularly with the involvement of the League of Shadows. But the base idea of having the Scarecrow's fear toxin pumped into the water supply that everybody consumes is legitimately one of my like waking nightmares. You know what I mean? It's like,
oh, it's terrifying.
Like, imagine if that happened. Like, we literally had, you know, we had a train crash in Northeast Ohio and people have been like worried about the drinking water and stuff like that. Imagine if we had like a fear-inducing supervillain living in Cleveland. Fuck that.
Reports of the train derailment saw that a guy in a scarecrow hat was driving. He's like, driving around.
Yeah. I love this episode too. When we first watched Nothing to Fear, and I was talking to you about how the scarecrow tends to have some of the better episodes in Batman the Animated Series. This is kind of what I was getting to. Utilizing fear is such a cool concept. It's such why cool Scarecrow concept. Is a top three Batman villain for sure. Because Batman's worst enemy is his personal demons. That's literally why he exists as a vigilante. And I absolutely forgot about, but loved revisiting the sequence where he's dreaming about his parents and they're going into Crime Alley. And he's like, don't go in that tunnel. And then the tunnel fades away and it's a revolver.
And
I was like,
a gun.
I was like, this is insane.
It's such a beautifully drawn sequence. Like, can you imagine? And this is all hand-drawn animation, like beautiful 2D renders. Like, dude, this must have taken them days and days to finish this sequence. And it's so fucking impressive.
Yeah. It kind of reminded me of like the Scarecrow stuff in Arkham Asylum too, where like you have to hide from his gaze and everything. Just like really weird visual like stuff happening around you and stuff. Like, I thought of that almost immediately. And I was like, this episode seems really influential on a lot of people.
It also
would
reminded
go on
me,
to work on Batman stuff.
It also really, really reminded me of Far From Home.
Yeah.
Remember the scene, the Mysterio scene in Far From Home? I was like, I really, really dig this version of Scarecrow. Like, I really like the Batman Begins Scarecrow. It's really simple. Yeah. You know, it's cool. Yeah. Like, you immediately see you. It's like a bad acid trip, right? Like, you're just seeing like scattered things or whatever. But the idea that this Scarecrow is like changing your entire worldview and perspective, I think that's fucking horrifying and really, really cool. Just an awesome sequence. That whole sequence of him tripping and then seeing all the bad guys. The scene where the Penguin blows up and his face explodes and turns into Two-Face.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fucking gnarly. This is, if you see this as a kid, you're not prepared for this shit. You're going to have nightmares.
Yeah. And, you know, even like him almost running over Robin with the Batmobile, like just turns a corner. Robin's in the middle there. It's like Casino Royale when he totals the Aston Martin and everything. It's just like really like just good Batman content. Like, this is just like, it's excellent. It's a detective story. Awesome. It's a mystery. It's got some really good themes in terms of playing with, you know, his uncomfortable relationship with what happened to his parents as always. And like, every time that the fear toxin gets kind of like reintroduced into a Batman story, you'd think you'd be sick of it, but you're not, you know, at least not when it's messing with our guy, Batman. Obviously the one that we talked about a couple weeks ago, Fear of Victory, is a little more campy where he's using it to bet on like sports games and stuff, which is just wild. But like, this is more of like the Scarecrow that we know and love.
Sure. Well, it's an actual plot that like makes sense. Like, Fear of Victory is not, it's like, why is this what you're having Scarecrow do? I don't understand. But like, this is weird. It's weird to think about. The similarities between this and Batman Begins are uncanny. Like, I want to know, like, I mean, you're the number one Batman the Animated Series fan that I know. Like, has Christopher Nolan said that he drew inspiration from this episode? I'm sure,
you know,
someone has.
I'm sure there's an interview somewhere that is. I know he's definitely said that like he pulled a lot for The Dark Knight from The Long Halloween, particularly with the trifecta relationship of Batman, Jim, and Harvey Dent. But like, yeah, I mean, every Batman or like director has seemed to, you know, dive in and pick and pull from the stuff that they really enjoy. And I love seeing that the Batman the Animated Series was so influential on the people that have made some of the best, you know, Batman films, which is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't seem like Christopher Nolan has been asked about this. When you search,
so if we ever get to interview Christopher Nolan,
so tell first, us how why you ripped off.
Why did you rip off Batman the Animated Series? Is number one. Number two is, do you think I should watch Tenet?
I still can't believe you haven't watched that fucking movie.
I know, I'm terrible. I'm just terrible.
I mean, it's not like the most important movie on the planet. I just think it's fascinating because I do think that you would find enjoyment in it.
I'm sure I would. I love both of those guys. I love time travel. Man.
I literally own it. It's literally free for you to watch. Okay.
I'll watch it someday.
Someday.
So I guess like there's so many to choose from, but do you have a specific moment of animation? We've already touched on a lot.
Yes. So, I mean, aside from, I think the easy pick would be the revolver, like the crime alley scene, the way that they animate and like draw the city shifting around Batman. And then the fact that like the entire thing crumbles around and changes into the gun. And there's even a little drop of blood. Did you notice that?
Yep.
There's a little drop of blood. And I'm like, can you show that in a fucking cartoon? I was like, can you show that in a kid's cartoon? I don't think they can. They did. They showed it on fucking Cartoon Network or WB, whatever. When did this air on? WB Kids?
Kids WB as well as like some of the main daytime channels, I think. Yeah,
okay. Because I would remember I would watch episodes of this and they'd be back to back with Animaniacs.
Yeah, buddy. Hell yeah. Them's were the times.
It was a simpler time.
Dude, my favorite period of time was when the last season of Batman, the animated series, was going on, which is technically the new Batman Adventures, while also being paired up with the new Superman animated show that came out from the same creators. So you would just watch Batman and Superman back to back. So good. Just so good. Take me back. Zack Snyder ruined my guys.
but beyond that scene, I'm gonna give my award, because I think that's the obvious one. I'm gonna give my award to the shot of the cell door when he's in the thing and he's like starting to come to. There's a really beautiful shot that looks straight out of a fucking like Stanley Kubrick movie or whatever, where it's like the cell door, where it's like bathed in red. It looks like fucking Mandy, like that movie with Nick Cage. And it's like the door slowly opens and then it transitions to Crime Alley. And that's when he like goes and walks in. I'm like, that's a fucking cool shot. That's a tattoo right there. I'd get that.
Yeah, it's sick as hell.
It's awesome.
Mine is similar. Mine is at the very beginning, the initial reveal of Batman sitting in the cell in the straitjacket. Badass. It just looks so dope. Yeah. It's just like... You're like, you see that and you're like, what the fuck? Like, you're literally like, how did this happen? And then he literally does the Thor Ragnarok, but you're wondering how I got here.
Oh no, Thor's stuck in a cage.
Exactly.
And he's sitting in the cell with the fucking chair check. He's like, rubble baby, rubble baby. Or what's Alfred saying in BVS? You know what I mean?
I know what you're talking about, but I don't remember. Rubber baby bubble buggy, I think.
Rubber baby bubble buggy, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
That's
all right. A cut joke for all you Batman v Superman fans out there.
They're out there. We know this. The Snyder Cut fans are in the woodwork, and they came out, and now they're back in. And
thought about rewatching that the other day. I had a weird tick in the back of my brain, and I was like, you know what? I kind of want to watch a couple scenes of that movie.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna rewatch it before The Flash. That's definitely gonna happen.
Let's just do the show. Let's do it all over again. Start with Man of Steel,
oh
baby.
Oh my god, no. I will watch Man of Steel with you again before The Flash, because that's gonna play a big part of it too.
Yeah.
So I think like the rewatch for The Flash is Man of Steel, Batman 89, and then Justice League, unfortunately. But
not BVS.
Yeah, I guess
I think you do 89 Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, Justice League Snyder Cut, and then that's it.
Go see The Flash. Yeah.
And then go see Flash.
You son of a bitch. I'm in. You said I'll watch all those movies all the live long day. You son of a bitch. Yeah. All right. Well, let's slot this thing in. So I really enjoy this episode. I think. Tell me if you think I'm crazy.
You crazy little horny boy right now. Where are you going to put this bad boy?
I think it's better than Nothing to Fear, personally.
I'll do you one better. I think that this is the new number 3. I think this is better than Joker's Favor.
Okay. I'll do you another one better. I think this is the new number 2, because I like this more than Two-Face Part 1.
Ooh, I don't know if I can agree with that. I would veto that, but I mean, give me your case, but like, I would say that I like the narrative of Two-Face.
Our Two-Face Part 1 is a better narrative. You were correct. But this is a better episode of Batman. Like, this is all Batman, focuses on our boy. Two-Face Part 1 mostly focuses on Harvey Dent. Not that that's a bad thing necessarily. It's good to dive into the characters. I think the animation is better in this than in the Harvey Dent one, just a little bit. Obviously, no, there's some really cool stuff that they do. But honestly, it could go either way. But I do think this is better than Joker's Favor, so I'm glad we agree there. So,
yeah, I think that this is easily a top three episode. But I think that I don't know. I just love the cliffhanger of Two-Face. I love the introduction of Harvey Dent and the relationship between him and Bruce. Like
Big Bad Harv.
I think that this episode is a visual spectacle. The emotional spectacle isn't as great as it is in Two-Face for, sure. for me personally.
I think that
what's this episode called? Heart of Darkness? What's it called? Dreams in Darkness. Dreams in Darkness is like, I mean, it is like a psyche Batman episode. I think that there could have been a little bit more. I think you could have pushed that a little bit further, and then it would have been. I think that if you push the angle of his psyche a little bit further, you would have, this would have been, this could have been number one.
I just think
that the
if this was a two-parter, I think we'd be thinking about it differently. It kind of runs out of room a little bit, and all of a sudden he's fighting Scarecrow at the end.
That's the one thing that I'll give this episode like not number one points for, is that I think that the end of it is not as satisfying as the cliffhanger in Two-Face, where you know, you have a climactic ending and then it's cut to credits and I want to immediately watch the next one.
Yeah.
I don't love that this episode divulges into a not so great fight in that, like, that underground tunnel. And it's then awful. The whole Batman whistling thing. Like,
hey, I think boys.
He's like flashing the cape around. So yeah, I think that takes away goodbye, a few points for it. But
okay, so you've convinced me. Let's make it the new number three.
Okay,
I just really want to watch Two-Face again. It's so good.
Two-Face. I still stand by it. Like I made the concession to give you the spot to let Heart of Ice be number one.
Thank you.
Me personally, I still feel that Two-Face is the best episode of this show so far. I just think immaculately done.
I would shed tears if I had any tears to shed.
Nora.
Nora. This is how I'll remember you. Oh man, I can't wait for when we run out of steam on the pod and we just do the impression episode where I just do all my characters.
You got a lot of them.
You're just interviewing everybody. So you're like, so Mr. Freeze, what'd you think about Jimmy Butler's 56-point night? I remember when Michael Jordan scored 50 a game. Yeah.
You kind of turned into a little bit of Davy Jones there. A little bit towards the end.
The little lost bell that never learned to fly. Yeah, he's coming too, for sure. All right, cool. So,
He's coming to the party.
So yeah, Dreams in Darkness is our new top three. So currently our top five, not to rehash everything else, but our top five right now is starting at number one, Heart of Ice, Two-Face Part 1, Dreams in Darkness,
Banger,
Joker's Favor, Banger, and Christmas with the Joker.
Banger. This is the top
five. That's the top five right there.
That's the top five. I would watch those five episodes right now.
Yeah, and we got some good ones coming down the pipe later on too, which is very exciting to me, but also like, I think some of the deliberation for the best episodes are going to be fun to talk about with you.
Sure.
It's the ones that we both are just like, yeah, this kind of sucks, that we could just kind of like throw it in. We're like, yeah, sure. Here it is.
I mean, think about this. This episode has been wild. We have a top three episode, a bottom five episode, and then one that's right in the middle. It's like literally this three episode run was like, low, high. It's like it was really weird. It was like almost
it's like that gif of the girl where she's like, no.
It's kombucha. This is the kombucha girl run of Batman episodes. No. Well,
oh man. Well, that wraps up our pod for this one. We will be returning for Radio Vision, diving into Volume 2, continuing on with Season 1 of Batman the Animated Series. Our kickoff for that, the next three episodes, if you want to prepare, is three episodes called Eternal Youth, Perchance to Dream, and the Cape and Cowl Conspiracy. Yeah, some good stuff coming up there. That'll be a fun little pod to do. There's some a little bit of highs, a little bit of lows, kind of like a couple of these that we've done. So, Zach, thanks for coming along in the Batmobile with me on this excursion. Wait to talk about Batman Begins with you in a couple minutes.
Hell yeah!
And if you guys like the show, just a quick reminder for where you can follow it, so you can be tuned in for the next time we talk about our guy, the Mad Hatter. Check us out at radiovania.com. You could also search for Radiovania on YouTube to see any of the videos that we put up there. Email us at radiovisionshow@gmail.com. What do you think of Matt as a Hatter? Is it really that dog shit, or is it better than we're giving it credit for? You tell us. Christopher Nolan, if you're listening, did you steal from this or not? We need to know. Radiovision Show on Instagram.com and Radiovania on Twitter. Zach, looking forward to the next one with you, buddy.
Absolutely, baby.
Well, that's all we got, guys. Catch us on the next time. Same Bat Podcast feed. Same Bat Podcast. Good night.